Welcome to the Fighting for Joy podcast. I'm your host, Jody Blick. Well, my guest today is a local friend of mine, April Bender. And wow, did we cover a lot in this episode. April starts by sharing about some childhood trauma that greatly affected her choices and decisions as she got older, especially heading into marriage. This led to confusion, lack of community, and lack of joy. But the beauty of her story is that God met her there. She learned about the power of prayer and fasting, the importance of following the leading of the Holy Spirit, and how God's love can bring freedom from shame and comfort in loneliness. We also talk about church hurt and persevering with the people of God, even when you have reason to walk away. I just know you are going to love hearing April's heart as she shares her story and some of the practical things that she has learned along the way, including how she began using systems and routines to get through each day as a single mom. Creating order out of chaos helped her fight for joy. I'm so glad that you found the podcast today, and I'm excited for you to hear my special conversation with my friend, April Bender. Well, hi, April. I'm so glad that you are here, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jody. I'm very excited as well.
Yeah. Well, I always like to start by having my guests give a little introduction for my listeners. So let's start by having you share a little bit about yourself and what your life looks like.
Sure, absolutely. Well, my name is April Bender, and a lot of people probably here in the community knew me as April Ross for a very long time. I am the mom to four children. My oldest is 22, and then I have a 20-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 9-year-old. So life is kind of in all stages right now.
For sure.
About to be a mother-in-law soon at the before the end of the year, and still have little ones in elementary school, so kind of all over the place. I am the founder and director of a childcare center here in Fremont that I've operated now, and we've been open this year will be 19 years.
Oh wow!
So majority of my adult life, because I opened it. You know, I was 21 years old. So most of my life is surrounded, and my children's, by my job. So, but, I think that's pretty much the majority. I'm married, my husband Todd, and we've been married now, spoiler, for 3 years. And I do enjoy, one of my hobbies is to work for a Frenchie rescue. So I've had numerous little Frenchie rescues that have stolen my heart and broken my heart. And and I do really enjoy that. So we have a little foster puppy right now that we're taking care of. So
that's awesome. Good. Good. Well, just to give a little background about how we know each other, I was thinking about that. I think our friendship first started through our kids and, you know, kind of having a couple kids the same age, our girls, Ellie and Grace, you know, in our old neighborhood. We both have moved since then, but it did have a number of girls their age. So they would get together for birthday parties and play dates. And I think that's how I first met you, but we also had a number of mutual friends. And like I said, we lived in the same neighborhood, so we would run into each other. Your house was right on the way in and out of the neighborhood. And we started, you know, going for walks. We attended the same church for a while and stuff like that. So, and then our older daughter, Justine, worked for you for a number of summers as a nanny for your younger boys. And she loved that and thinks the world of you and enjoyed your boys so much. So that's kind of how I remember initially getting connected with you. Is that the same for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I do remember, I don't think I'll ever forget this, that the day Max's first day of high school, Alec broke his leg.
Oh, that's right.
And Max had never gone to that school before, which neither have any of the other freshmen, but he had left a very, very small school to go to this large public school. And I called you and, you know, asked if you could take care of Max and pick him up on his first day from high school, because I was in the emergency room with Alec. So
I remember that.
Very, very special too.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one thing too, that as we get started, I just wanted to mention and just publicly thank you for too, is just the way that you drew near to me in grief. Probably cry, but you know,
Sorry, I didn't know I was going to cry. So give me a second.
You know, Jody, actually, I want to say that I'm not a big crier usually. And every time I'm around you, I feel this contentment.
Yeah.
Just something about being around you really helps me to feel some kind of comfort and peace that I can let those emotions out somehow. Yeah. And it draws you draw it out of me. And,
well, you're welcome.
That we like to cry, but it is very special to me that I have that relationship with you.
Thank you for saying that. Because grief can be it can be scary for people. It's definitely scary when you're going through it. But it's scary for others to observe it and to see it. But I remember you reaching out in a number of just really meaningful ways. And I remember you asking me for lunch at one point. And it really couldn't have been too long after Jackson died. And I just remember, you know, your tenderness and your willingness to listen. And I believe that's when you started to kind of share with me, too, some of your hard stuff and some of the difficult things that you had walked through in life. And I don't know. I think that, you know, that's probably why you weren't scared off by my grief and my tears, because you had them too. And so I think about that lunch every once in a while. I remember sitting at that little high top table by the windows and just being grateful for somebody who was willing to sit with me in my grief. So thank you for being willing to enter in and walk with me. And I think it's paved the way for our special friendship today and the way we can cry together and just the ways that we are connected. And I'm just thankful for our friendship that we don't have to spend, you know, a ton of time together to feel close to one another. And I feel like for us, it's often more about the quality of our time and how we're able to talk about a lot of really good, hard things, more than the quantity or the, quantity of time we get to spend together. So anyway, I've just appreciated that a lot.
Well, the feelings are mutual, so I appreciate you sharing that with me.
Yeah. Well, all that to say, I've been looking forward to having you on the podcast, and I remember a conversation that we had about you being a guest, and I think it was like 2 summers ago. You were here at my house for a Fighting for Joy live event, and my friend Kathy Del Seno had shared that night, and I don't remember if it was that same night or right afterwards, but you came up to me, and you said you were inspired by what she shared, and you were thinking that you were ready to start thinking about how to share your story at some point, and that you were understanding the power of story and the way that, you know, vulnerability can encourage and help others fight for joy. And so thank you for being here, you know, ready to share. And I just think it's been a special process of you getting ready to share your story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, when somebody is ready to share their story, I think it can be hard to know where to start and what to include, because our stories are complicated. And at, you know, the stage in life that we're at, we've had decades of living in a broken world and walking through difficult things. So as we start, I'm just going to kind of leave it up to you. I don't know where you would like to start, but let's just dive in and I'll kind of hand it over to you to start sharing your story.
All right. Well, thinking of where to start has actually been pretty hard. Mm-hmm. So what I decided was to start with my childhood and a couple of the memories that probably formed some major decisions later in my adult life. And, you know, when it comes down to it, it's hard to remember like my exact age and those kinds of things. And I'll share as much as I can without, you know, sharing other people's stories, and there is a lot of other people intertwined in this, but I do think that there is power in sharing and not feeling alone in some way, shape, or form. So when I was approximately, I think I was around 11 years old, my parents announced, they sat us down in our living room with another couple that they were friends with, and announced that they were getting a divorce. And I remember as a child thinking, like, this was a couple that we had gotten together with very frequently. They had children the same age as we were. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were really good friends, and it was a small town. And I remember thinking, why is my dad sitting by her, and why is my mom sitting by him? And it wasn't them, their own spouse. And they announced to us that they were going to be getting a divorce. And it was just absolutely shocking because I had never really seen my parents fight. I didn't realize that there were any troubles going on. I was just a, you know, blissfully, you know, skipping along being a child. And from that moment forward, prior to that, we lived a farm life. We lived on my grandparents' old farm. We had animals. My dad was a farmer. We were very involved with my grandparents and cousins and all of, you know, those special memories, just a very close-knit family and really free thinking. You know, we weren't really stressed that I knew of. So I was just a free-spirited, busy little girl. And I have a younger brother and younger sister. And so they were younger than me at that point. And so that was the announcement. And then the following weekend, we left town to go to my great-grandfather's funeral. And when we came back, all of our belongings were in our yard.
Wow.
Yes. And I just remember pulling up and like just thrown, you know, not like gracefully placed in any kind of order, but our belongings that we were maybe allowed to have or were being, you know, given were out in the lawn and we had no place to go. And I don't think a lot of people know that about my story. Right. And I don't think a lot of people that see me today know what happened from that day forward to kind of lead into my young adult life. And so at that point, we were homeless. We had no home. We had no place to go. My parents had not been through the court system yet to allocate funds or belongings or even a parenting plan, custody agreement that I'm aware of anyways. It had been a very short, you know, time between. And I remember my mom just being so upset and trying to comfort us and take care of us in the best way she knew. And at that point, she had been a stay-at-home mom on the farm, taking care of a large property, bringing meals and stuff to the men in the fields, and running us to school and appointments and stuff like that. And actually, my dad was very hands-on with us, too. He was a very good caretaker, a very good father. If we were sick or something, he would be the one that would care for us. And, you know, he would go to all of our softball games and we would go to his and just a very, you know, involved family. So it was pretty blindsided. And I think potentially my mom was, too.
So just to clarify, so it was your mom and you kids' stuff. Okay. So your dad was still there then.
And his new girlfriend that he would, you know, soon marry thereafter had moved in with her three children who were our friends, who were very close in age to us. And we really, you know, we really enjoyed these children. They were, you know, became our stepbrother and sisters at some point. And that was probably like one of the silver linings to it is that we had other children our age and friends that were going through a lot of, from a different perspective, but a lot of the same thing with us. So when we were there, we had our friends, right? Which were our then step-siblings. But and so from that point forward, we were homeless for a while and we had to go pick up as much of our stuff as we could and put in the car. We didn't know what was going on. And we went and lived with one of my mom's friends. And I don't even know how long at this point it was, but several months until she could find employment. And she had kind of helped some friends. One of her friends actually owned a daycare center. And so she kind of filled in there. She had done, you know, various things around the community, mostly for volunteer work, but she hadn't had like a steady income. So she had to find employment. And then we moved into a like housekeeper's suite at a greenhouse. Like literally a greenhouse where they grow plants and sell plants. So it was a business and they had a little, you know, a little rental apartment attached to it. And so we lived at this business then until we moved out of Fremont or until we moved out of Hebron. And I remember just the visits and everything being very stressful with our dad and all that goes into the divorce setting. And so from that moment, I knew no matter what, I would not get divorced in my life. And that was a very concrete plan in my mind. And it affected pretty much every decision from that point forward, yeah. other than who I selected mm-hmm. not carefully, which we'll get into later. But mm-hmm. it really shaped my mindset on relationships, and that I didn't want my children mm-hmm. To go through that. And I didn't necessarily think about it from the perspective as the adult or the, you know, the other spouse, or, you know, from my mom's perspective. I saw it from a child's perspective and all of the hurt. Yeah. And eventually, you know, my dad was in his new relationship and marriage then. And, you know, I can't speak for him. That's his story. But I don't think it was an easy relationship. And it later ended. But during that time, which was about 13 years, probably after the first year and a half, our visits just pretty much dissipated. We stopped seeing him. He was busy taking care of the new kids and all of the activities mm-hmm. and stuff that were involved with them. And then they later had another child who we just adored, you know, this little baby. And
yeah.
life got, you know, busy, you know, for him, and we just didn't see him then anymore. If we did, it would be very, very, very sporadic. And so mm-hmm. that just really, you know, concreted yeah. in my decision yeah. that yeah. I was not going to have this life in the future. So then moving forward, my mom was a single mom, and we moved kind of in the middle of the night on my 13th birthday. My mom woke us up and we grabbed as much as we could. And she told us that we were moving to Fremont. And this was in December. So right before Christmas break for my seventh grade year. So I lived in a town that was about maybe 1,200 people. And when we moved to Fremont, I was adamant that I didn't want to go to a private school or, you know, a school that was like religious to my mm-hmm. seventh grade mm-hmm. mentality. And I wanted to go to the public school because that's where I'd gone before. And the building probably had more students in it than my entire town did. It was wow. very overwhelming. The students were very welcoming and kind that I was paired with, but I couldn't find my locker. I couldn't find my classes. It, you know, the building was just, there was multiple buildings
yeah.
and it was very overwhelming. So then I ended up switching schools to the smaller private school after the Christmas break, and then finished my seventh grade year there. And then my mom got remarried. She had met somebody through a newspaper ad, and he lived in a different town, and it was a small town. So we moved there then over the summer, and I spent my eighth grade year in this new little town. And it was perfect for me because I was used to the small town, but mm-hmm. I had been through so many things that I didn't necessarily associate with the people my age.
Right. I mean, I'm just thinking right here. So 11 to 14 is where you're at right now.
Yes.
Just in all of the trauma and your life getting turned upside down.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So of course you would be in a different place than these other 14-year-olds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I really hung out with either like the seniors or people who had already graduated. And there was just a lot of, you could call it maybe chaos in my home with this new setting. And my mom stayed married to this gentleman for 1 year, and then we moved back to Fremont. So even in the home, it, you know, it wasn't maybe like abusive, but it was very, very chaotic and different than what we had been used to. So anyways, they got divorced and we moved back to Fremont. And that's really where my rest of, you know, leading into my young adult life and really started. I feel like I tried to distance myself from my mom. I didn't see things from her view. Of course, I was a teenager anyway, and anybody who has had a teenager before can understand kind of that tension and the child wanting to be, or the teenager wanting to be their own person and separate from their parents and not understanding why their parents are making the decisions, which ultimately are probably for their best interest. But so I had accelerated in my grades because I had moved so much. So I was in classes that were above, you know, my grade level. So I was bored. So I was misbehaving. I also am a pretty hyper person anyway and really, really struggle to sit still. So I pretty much just did what I wanted. My mom was working and had gone back to school. She definitely did go through the incredibly hard steps to better her life, and she became an RN. And so she was working and doing all of the things while still going to school full time. And I started hanging out with older people than my age group. I hung out with people my age as well. And eventually the girls in my school did warm up to me, but it was a long process that they were not welcoming. And they were, you know, not letting me sit with them at the table at school and not including me in the groups and stuff like that. And that probably went on for majority of the eighth grade year. And so I was lonely or wanting to find relationships, or just, you know, probably pretty codependent also at that point and needy. And so I ended up meeting a man that would be my future husband when I was very young. And we pretty much just, I pretty much quit hanging out with everybody my age, and I would just hang out with him. So by the time I was 16 going on 17, I moved out of my mom's house and I moved in with him, and he lived with his sister and her husband. And I would continue to go to school, but then the red flag started, which as a 17-year-old I did not realize, but glaringly obvious now looking back. So for example, I would leave school. I would either sneak out of school, or I would find a reason that I needed to leave early to go pick him up because he needed picked up for some reason. Well, come to find out, it was because he didn't have a driver's license. He was quite a bit older than me. He was 23 and I was 17 at the time and didn't know that. I didn't know his age because he had not told the truth about that, nor did he tell the truth actually about his name. So his first and last name were not even his real first and last name. So, you know, he would ask, you know, can you come pick me up, or I want to see you, stuff like that. And 17-year-old's like, yeah, definitely. He wants to see me. So I would leave school and I would go get him. And then later, his sister actually ended up telling me, you realize, I found a piece of mail that said his real name. And she had said, you know, do you realize that this isn't his name and this is how old he was, and some truths. And I thought, oh, she just doesn't like me. You know, she's trying to push me away or whatever. And she was really being honest. She was really, you know, a few years older even than me. And I think she's older than, she's younger than him, I believe. But old enough, you know, to have some insight, and obviously the truth being a sister that things weren't right. And so I should have seen things then, but I didn't. And he would say all of the things. And so eventually I ended up getting pregnant and we lived together. And I remember a point in there that finally I did start seeing some things. I worked full time in a different company, and I didn't share a lot about my story with many people, which is really one of the things that I feel is important looking back, is to share and have somebody that you can feel safe with to share, that can speak truth into your life from an outside perspective. But so to summarize and bring this in maybe for a little bit shorter of a story than it could be, lots of people say I should write a book and might be, you know, a trilogy. But and so we got married, two children in. And we were at a church, and this is kind of part of a hurt too, is that, you know, you would hear that people get hurt by churches, and you think, how in the world can a church hurt somebody? Like, that just is impossible, or that doesn't happen, or they're being petty, or they're being hypersensitive. But what happened really transpired by the same church over probably about a 15-year span, not consistently, but that was the first time. So we went in for a premarital meeting in order to get married in the church. They required this several week course. And in order to enter into the course, you needed to go to this, you know, pre-meeting to get in. So we went, and I remember what I was wearing, jeans and a Shields t-shirt. Mm-hmm. Nothing fancy. It was just supposed to be a quick 15 to 30 minute meeting with the pastor, you know, about your story. And we had our two little kids with us. Max was like 2.5 going on 3, and Ellie was 9 months old and or 10 months old. And they were walking around the coffee table in the pastor's office, and Ellie was, you know, a little bit sad. So I was comforting her, and my ex-husband and the pastor were having a little bit of an argument. And the pastor had said, you know, we feel strongly that you should not live together if you're going to get married here. Like, we want to set you out on the right path, which I agree with. And I was really hoping that these classes were going to lead us into like fixing some issues that were happening. And instead, my ex-husband kind of got into a fight with the pastor and said, you're trying to break up my family. How dare you do this to us? We can't live apart. You know, that isn't going to happen. And they kind of got into a little bit of a battle there. And the pastor said, fine, then get married right now. I'll marry you right now. And so he said, all right, we're going to get married right now. And I was 20 at the time.
Wow.
Or 21. I think I was 21. And so the pastor went out into the hallway and got a couple walking through the hall and said, we need a witness. Will you come in and witness this marriage?
Oh my goodness.
I'm not even sure that the license has the correct date on it. Like, it was very unscheduled, very shocking.
Wow.
And I remember just shaking and thinking, what am I doing? Don't say yes, don't agree, but yet not knowing what else to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have a mortgage. We have two kids. You know, I have a full-time job. Like, I need to, you know, get back to and keep things smooth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, at home, things were not smooth at all. And I remember just praying and praying and praying, thinking as soon as we get into this class, things are going to get better because they're going to tell us what a real relationship looks like and how to treat each other and how a wife should be treated.
Yeah.
And it was the end. That was it. We didn't even get to go to the class. Wow. Classes. Wow. It was right then and there. That was it. There was no premarital counseling, you know, no therapy, no classes, and nothing changed. And I remember praying, you know, God, we did this in your house. We did it at church with a pastor. We're, you know, want to do things right moving forward. Will you please bless this marriage and help us get on track? And it just got worse from there.
Mm-hmm.
Things were unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any physical abuse,
mm-hmm.
but I remember my biggest thief of my joy
mm-hmm.
was confusion.
Oh, of course. I mean, that's what I keep hearing. It's that chaos word you use too. Chaos and confusion and disappointment, right? Like you were hoping for one thing and you left married.
Right.
I mean, yes. How confusing at that age after all of the confusion you had experienced in the previous years at home. I'm so sorry, April. That's hard.
It is
hard. And that, yes. You know, when you're going to church for help and instead right. they hurt.
Yes.
That's devastating.
Yes. You know, and I don't think the pastor intended it to be that way, but I think not being educated on some signs of control
mm-hmm.
Is hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And it did transpire later on to, you know, to do additional hurtful things that could have been such a huge opportunity mm-hmm. to help.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
instead the door was closed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's really one of my big takeaways is that, you know, I have really tried to be intentional, and I'm not good at it yet. It's mm-hmm. taking mm-hmm. me a lot of practice to not overload my schedule. So that way, when there is somebody that shares something briefly with me that I hear the Holy Spirit speaking and, you know, trusting your gut or having that gut feeling, a lot of times is the Holy Spirit speaking to us in some way? Like, dig more into this, or something isn't right, or sit in it for a moment, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's rest in this and not brush it under the rug. There's something to this, or, you know, that nudge of somebody might need to have ask a little bit deeper question, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Instead of how are you, right? How did this specific thing happen for you? Or how are you feeling about this specific thing? And ask a more open-ended question instead of, you know, how are you doing? Oh, great, fine, you know. And taking, having that intentional time in my schedule to stop and ask somebody maybe that I recognize isn't acting their normal self or is putting on a fake smile out of necessity, right? Yeah. To be able to reach out and ask. And so that is one of my, you know, big takeaways that I have learned through all of this is to, now that I'm through the process, and yes, there's still rough moments and sad moments or difficult moments, but to offer that to other people and to leave that space and to be present for somebody and to really don't brush the surface, try to dig a little bit deeper in it.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, April, because I do feel like that is a way to turn purpose, you know, to get purpose from your pain and to take something you've walked through and had, and to use it to help other people. And that does bring healing and that does help you to see maybe some of God's purposes in the hard things you've had to walk through, because that's exactly what I was saying at the beginning of this recording of what you did for me. You know, you saw my hurt and you made space for me and you made time for me and you sat with me, and to know that that is the outcome of what you've walked through is beautiful. And that's part of what this whole fight for joy looks like, because when you walk through hard things, it is not a guarantee that you're going to be a better person, a more beautiful person, a more kind, compassionate person. It's not a guarantee. You and I both know people who are hard now and they're bitter and they are angry and they have not let the refining process of the brokenness of this world turn them into a better person. And I have seen that in you. And that is part of why I was excited to have you on here, because I see your heart for the broken and I see your heart for someone who needs to be seen and believed and heard. And that does take time. And our schedules are all so busy and our weeks are packed full. And so it does take intentionality to slow down and say, I'm going to try to leave some space in my day so that if I do run into somebody, you know, I have a minute to hear their heart. And it gets back to what you were saying too about what you wished you would have done too, which was let other people in and have like that sense of community. And I don't think it's common for, you know, the age you were at. I think it's very, I think it's a much more common to want to be independent, to kind of think, you know, to be swept up in a relationship at the cost of other people that you need in your life. And so that is a good message for, you know, young adults and people who are in a relationship, because that can be a red flag, is when it just gets down to the two of you all of the time. That is kind of putting you in danger, because then you aren't having people speak that truth into you. And then all of a sudden things are happening that you don't have somebody to come alongside and talk through it with.
I completely agree. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Not having those outside connections and friends is a huge red flag that we just need other people to life into us, whether it's a support of saying, yes, this is a positive relationship, or I'm so happy for you, or being open to the opposite, right? Of, you know, I'm happy for you and this is great, but you know, I do notice these things, and having somebody that is strong like that, that can speak up, is also hard to find. And, you know, so basically, like, picking up in the story, I was 21 at that time. And I remember, like, pretty much fast forward to the age of 33 is when really my blinders fell off. And during those years, it was, you know, I had a tubal pregnancy, a rupture, and it's called an ectopic pregnancy, and having severe pain and being, you know, a life-threatening situation because it had ruptured. Mm-hmm. It's already life-threatening before, but and a misdiagnosis that it had been a molar pregnancy that is like a cancerous cell growing, mocking a pregnancy. Yeah. Just a lot of health issues around that.
So where were you at then at this point? Your blinders are falling off. You've been having your joy robbed through a lot of confusion and chaos and just a difficult relationship. What happened next? When did you kind of start then this fight for joy?
So one of the biggest changes was that we had gone through counseling together, Christian counseling at a church, the same mm-hmm. church. Mm-hmm. And getting to do couples therapy together and then coming in individually myself after a couple session was very, very helpful to mm-hmm, me to mm-hmm. hear from a Christian perspective that I did have grounds for divorce if that mm-hmm. were to be my decision. Mm-hmm. To have that said to me by a pastor who was also a licensed therapist as well. But mm-hmm. That really was the moment that it wasn't, yes, I'm going to run out and go get a divorce. It was just between me and God, really. And I feel that there was a few moments. One impactful moment right after that was the church did a fast. They did a fast every year. And during my fast, I prayed and prayed and prayed for clarity. Mm-hmm. That was my goal. I really ultimately wanted an answer. Should I stay or should I go? And so each day he had this special message for me. And even, you know, sometimes it'd be like noon and I'm like, Lord, I haven't heard from you. I'm just so desperate to hear from you. I cherish it. I love hearing from you. I'm just begging you before the end of the day, please talk to me. And so I prayed. And that day I had said, you know, Lord, this is the last day. What's your answer? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the truth, right? I'm praying for clarity. What's really happening? Am I being controlling and overreacting and hypersensitive, or are these things really happening? Mm-hmm. And what's the answer? Am I supposed to stay or am I supposed to go? Mm-hmm. And God said, right before we were supposed to leave the hotel to go home, April, you thought this whole time that the fast was for an answer, but it wasn't. The point of it is that you and I would get close, because whether you stay or you go, you're going to need me.
That's so beautiful. That is so beautiful, April. That is so often how we approach God. It's for answers. It's for things. It's for Him to do for us. And He just wants us to desire more of Him and to get closer to Him. And sometimes it takes something like a fast or just these set apart intense times in our spiritual journey to get to that place, because the world is louder. The world is shouting at us with all these other things that promise to be better and promise to satisfy, and they just overpromise and underdeliver. And so that is a beautiful story that you went to Him seeking answers and He gave you Himself.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
I will never forget that.
And yeah. And get you a tissue.
It really does speak to the power of faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, through all of those years, mm-hmm. you know, I grew up Catholic and I might have known the prayers and had mm-hmm. everything memorized, but I didn't have the relationship. Mm-hmm. And that was the blessing of this church is that I remember sitting in, you know, service thinking, was he in our closet all week? Like, where, you know, this is exactly what's happening in my heart, or this is what's happening in our home, and I needed to hear the message. And the Lord knows. And I have had moments of not hearing. Years and years have passed, right, since this. And I haven't had this clear daily communication like I did during that fast. Mm-hmm. So it's just so evident that God knew I needed Him, right?
Yeah.
And from there, He put people in my life that I was going to need. Mm-hmm. And He really gave me the decision. He never once did He say, you need to leave or you need to stay. He gave me that choice. And another message was, and this message came up twice, actually, with a huge span between, years between, was that I know your heart and you love me and you want to make the right decision. So don't hold it over yourself, right? That you're being selfish or that you're not having good intentions in this. I can see your heart and your heart is pure in this. And that really helped me because nobody was saying that to me. Mm. Nobody knew what I was going through.
Right.
And my husband was definitely not speaking that into me. It was the opposite. And so for God to do that special thing for me, and I think that's, it's hard, right? It's hard for me to share that because to somebody who doesn't have that relationship, or if you would have shared that with me, you know, 6 years before that, I probably would have thought you were crazy. Because I didn't have that relationship, but because of my dedication to reading my Bible and doing Bible studies and just really honestly out of desperation that I was so confused and so sad and so lonely in my marriage that I had nowhere else to go, that I just, I clung to that and it ended up being that our relationship grew and so many things have transpired from that. And
And we can hate what brings us to that point, but so often that is what God uses to draw us to himself, is getting to the end of ourselves, getting to the end of the rope in a relationship or with, you know, our health journey. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we can just get to a place where we are so broken that we finally say, okay, well, I'm just going to shut down all these other things. Like you said, you weren't listening to music, watching TV, you know, doing all of, you were just focusing in on him, and he showed up and he was there for you. And that, you know, began a whole different journey of a relationship with him. And that is so kind and gracious of him to do that. And I think, like you said, staying in his word, I mean, we hear from him in that way, and the Holy Spirit, we hear from him that way. And so it is, it's super encouraging to hear him respond to your desperate cries. And that's what I tell people, you know, when they are just lonely and desperate and so discouraged and confused. And I just try to remind them that God hears you. He hears you and he is with you and he will respond to these cries that you, you know, bring to him, and he will walk with you. You will never be alone when you are running to him. But so, okay, so let's, so then, you know, a lot of times we think if we're in a bad situation, we're in a difficult place, if only X, Y, and Z, then life will be great again, or then we'll have this joy return or whatever. So after, you know, you did get a divorce and now you're a single mom, I mean, I'm guessing that didn't solve all the problems, right? So what was your fight for joy like then? And what were some things you learned during those single years?
Right. I want to comment too about the, in order to hear him, right? So this is my struggle now, is that I'm too busy. And if you're too busy and you're not dedicated to quiet and peace, you can't hear him. And that's really ultimately Satan's little game with us, is he knows
keep us busy.
Busyness will distract us. And so now that, you know, I'm not living in this, you know, fog and the, you know, my peace is here and my joy is here that I fought relentlessly for. It's so easy to fall prey to that distraction. And that's probably what, you know, my chapter of life is now, is that I do have to fight for that quiet, peace, still, you know, noiseless area so that way I can still retain that relationship and hear him. And it's a struggle that, you know, and then not hearing is sad, right? Like, so now, life is a lot different. So during my single years, so I was a single mom of my four kiddos for about 7 years. And, you know, I'd say, and I told you this, Jody, it's very silly to say this, but my number one thing that got me through was systems.
I love it. Yeah. That makes so much sense to me, April, because, I mean, God is a God of order. We're created in his image. So having order in the midst of a chaotic time makes so much sense. So what did that look like for you?
Well, it's actually kind of funny that I didn't realize it necessarily. Mm-hmm. That's definitely my personality. And I think, you know, the only way for my job to and my business to thrive and grow and be successful is with systems, right? Any mm-hmm. successful business has solid systems in place. So I think it was just ingrained in my brain.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, you know, a survival mode. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't even realize that I was this systematic person and that systems were my plan until I met my future husband, Todd. And, you know, he would come to our house and he would, you know, maybe sit on the couch or something. And he doesn't have any children prior to us, you know, getting married. Mm-hmm. And so he would kind of just like watch me, you know, like he would watch me walk from one end of the house to the next end of the house. And, you know, like I'm just doing all of these things. And, you know, finally he would say, are you going to sit down? You know, like I drove all the way from Lincoln, you know, he wouldn't complain by any means, but he was just like almost as silly as it sounds, like in awe that one person was capable of like successfully getting through a day mm-hmm. with all of the weight of being a single mom. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the worry of financial stress like most single moms have. Mm-hmm. I cannot even imagine if I didn't have the resources that I had built from my business, how I would have survived having to move. I got to stay in my same home and keep my same job and live in my same city and keep our same lifestyle. I can't imagine having to go through that. But so he would say, you know, you just have all these systems in place mm-hmm. and they're not my system, right? They're mm-hmm. And so when you say now, what is life like, right? Is it all peaches and roses and smooth sailing? It is challenging mm-hmm. because ingrained in me are these systems. And mm-hmm. so some of the systems, for example, were that, you know, what day it was is what needed to happen. Mm-hmm. So on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I go to body pump class and I work out at the Y and I stand in the same spot and I associate with the mm-hmm. same people. And mm-hmm. I that's what I do because mm-hmm. it's Monday at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I had to just do the next thing. Yeah. And another silly thing would be in the meantime, one thing that I didn't share is that I had three children while I was married. And the day I found out that I was pregnant with my fourth child is the day that I filed for divorce. Mm-hmm. Pretty much the moment that I was absolutely positively not willing to stay one more minute. Mm-hmm. And I had gone through, kind of to backtrack just slightly, I had gone to what is known here as the Bridge, which is a domestic violence center. Mm-hmm. And I remember having to hide my mm-hmm. car, having to mm-hmm. save the phone number as something different in my phone because I was deathly afraid of the outcome had I been found out that I was seeking help. Mm-hmm. And they gave me this round wheel of control that you could spin slowly to see different situations or characteristics to see if you were in a relationship that was inappropriate in the sense of control. And I remember going into a quiet space after I left at my business, after I left the center for domestic violence. And I looked at it and I thought, I read the first one and I'm like, yeah, that's true in my house, right? Going to the next one. Oh, two. Yes, that one's true too. Mm. And going through and all besides maybe one of them or two, you know, somewhat didn't apply to me. And I was just literally shocked that it was like the blinders came off that moment. And all that I had been feeling confusion on was validated. That I wasn't crazy, that I wasn't imagining these things that I had been told I was just imagining or that weren't really true how they were, which now people know, and I didn't have the word then, the term is gaslighting. Mm-hmm. Had I known, that would have been very helpful to me, but I did not. And I also wasn't sharing with anybody
outside. I know it gets
outside.
Back to that whole thing of, you know, the bridge came in and they helped you to see because you need other people to help with that clarity. Yeah.
And it was like, I had to keep this like perfect, you know, face on for the community because I was, you know, a face of my business. And I didn't want people to think that if I couldn't handle what was going on in my personal life, then I wouldn't be able to handle my business. Mm-hmm, and people mm-hmm. trust me with their most prized possession, their child at a young age.
Yeah.
And I take my job very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't willing to sacrifice mm-hmm. that in fear that people would judge me, that I wasn't capable or mm-hmm. trustworthy. And little did I know after the fact that even my customers, my teachers, which are my staff, you know, could see all of it. And they came up to me after and would say, you know, we knew. If I would have just been willing, right, to share. And there was maybe a couple people here and there that little things, you know, that my staff that would come up and ask. But so getting back to answer your question of my systems, I had a baby as a single mom. So he was my fourth. And I remember at first when I found out I was pregnant, I was very, very mad and upset. And then again, praying about it and talking. At that point, I was willing to talk to people. Also, I didn't feel fear because he didn't live with me. I didn't feel fear of talking to somebody that he would find out and then I would be in trouble. And so I came to terms with the fact that I was going to have another child, and it became literally like a saving grace to me. This little guy, of all things to make me cry, he just helped me and the other three kids bring so much joy into our life that we didn't know was missing. And I thought, well, this is wonderful because I get to raise him how I want. All the years that I didn't get to, you know, train up my other three in the way that I wanted, this little one was mine to do what God led me to do and what I wanted to parent, the way I wanted to parent and how, and I didn't have to ask anybody, right? What do you want me to do? Or how do you want to do this? And so it just became this amazing thing. And there was time of shame in there too, right? Like people know I'm not married anymore. They're going to wonder whose baby is this? how did this happen? Right. And that's my story to share with who needs to be. But, and so I remember having to tell my ex-husband, you know, that we are going to have a fourth child and being fearful of what he would do to me or what would happen to the baby when he had to go visit. And so anyways, having this baby, one of my systems, getting back to systems, was that I still had to be at work in the morning and I still had three other kids to get to school. And so many people at my job were relying on me for their livelihood and for their children and to go to school and go to work. And so I would dress my baby at night. I would put him in his outfit the night before of what he was going to wear the next day. So instead of pajamas, I would put him in his next day outfit. And that probably saved me 20 to 30 minutes every morning. I would just change his diaper and feed him and get him clean and get the other kids fed. And literally thank God that this little boy was so easygoing, so carefree. He didn't know any different than running around, right? And going to basketball games and going to volleyball games and sleeping in his clothes. So that was definitely one of my systems. And then a huge, huge, huge thing that I didn't do before was to ask for help.
That's
boy, I tell you, I was so stubborn of not being willing to, again, I felt shame. I thought, if I can't do it, I'm going to look bad or I need to just figure out a way. And so there were so many moms that would step up and help me with my older ones of getting them to games that I couldn't be in two places for or bringing them home after practice. So that was helpful. And then meal prepping. I'm probably the master of all meal prep. I can turn any food into a meal, leftover, something random, and I would prepare in advance. So I would typically prepare like on a Saturday or Sunday because I didn't work weekends, and I would make the week's worth of meals, and that would be what I would take to work for my own lunch. I would pack my kids' school lunch because I didn't want them to eat the nasty school lunch, and And then that's what we would have, you know, we would have one of those meals and we would reheat the meal, or we would have it, you know, a couple times a week. On Tuesday, Thursday, we would have one of them, and Wednesday, you know, Friday, we would have the others. And that I would just do all the mess, all of the prep work, everything in that one day. And that really, really, I mean, just those daily things that are so hard when you're grieving. Nobody wants to cook when you're sad. Nobody wants to do dishes when they're sad.
Or work out. Or nobody wants,
right. And so it was just the way it was. It was a system. You follow the system. And I didn't recognize it for a system in the moment. But then, like I said, when my, you know, future husband Todd would come over, he would just see all of this in action. And he's like, you're like a machine. You just have a system. For everything, for cleaning, for meal prep, for, you know, for eating, for feeding your family, for getting from point A to point B. And it was very systematic. And when I would say something, the kids knew that's the way it is. And I think children thrive off of routine and consistency. And them going through trauma then and chaos, knowing that they could count on me, that they knew what to expect, helped them as well. Through all of the things that had changed in their life too. But so systems was a huge thing. Like I didn't have to stop and think, do I want to go to the gym? It was, it's Monday, you're going to the gym, right? Yeah,
that is such a great message to share today, because I think when people are in the midst of a chaotic time of life, things are falling apart. They're dealing with shame, you know, just some of the things that you just mentioned. To do the next thing can involve doing it in an organized way. And that does bring an inner peace and a calm. And just like you were saying, your kids then know what to expect in a place, in a season, you know, where they didn't know really maybe what to expect all the time from different people or in different situations. They knew what they could expect at home and with their mom. And that's beautiful. And I think that that's a great takeaway for anybody who's in the middle of a time that feels out of control, to just figure out how can I bring some organization to my life right now through food prep, through working out, through scheduling, through thinking ahead. So yeah, that's great. Yeah. So I want to touch quickly on, you know, you talked about feeling shame. You talked about never wanting to get a divorce and putting your kids through the same kind of traumatic things. And, you know, that's just where life brought you. How did you process that? How have you dealt with that? How have you made peace with that? What are some things that you've done or ways that you've gotten to a place now where you can kind of say like, I am not going to let this defeat me. I'm not going to beat myself up anymore about this. How have you gotten to that place?
You know, I remember one of the very first times that I felt a public display or a potential public display of this shame and the brokenness. And Jody, I'm sure you can relate. After Jackson passed away, that first Christmas card we had done for years.
Yeah.
A family photo and sending out the Christmas card. And I thought, well, I can't. I don't have a family anymore. And I think I just had to, I wouldn't for some reason let it go. I wanted to still fit that, you know, routine, that ritual that I had done, that tradition. And I really had to think, what is it that I can live with? What, maybe it's not me and the kids. So I remember that year, I just took a picture of them. I didn't include myself in it. And I thought, okay. And so I think the number one thing was, what is just the next right thing that I can do?
Yeah,
I don't have to think 5 years, 3 years, 3 weeks, even sometimes 3 days in advance, or even literally when it's the worst of the worst days, 3 hours. I can think right now in the moment, what is the next right thing that I can do and make a decision and follow through with that and then be done, right? Yeah. That decision has been made. I can get that off of my shoulders and I can move forward. And knowing that your intentions are pure, that you're trying your best, and you have to live with it, right? And if you did mess up, it's fine, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't, you know, what's the worst that happened in the moment? Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody looked at your Christmas card and was like, what, you know. Mm-hmm. But giving people grace, mm-hmm. honestly, maybe two people even thought twice about it, mm-hmm. and to take me out of the spotlight.
Yeah.
So in a lot of what I hear myself repeat back is me, mm-hmm. me, I, what did I think? What was I feeling? And remembering that we are only here for such a short period of time, mm-hmm. and that ultimately our purpose is to bring glory to God. And
yeah.
it sometimes takes saying something so dramatic. That's a very dramatic, bold mindset and thought. Mm-hmm. It's not just a flippant thought that you can have, right? And that's a very difficult thing to say, especially when things are the worst of the worst. Mm-hmm. But somehow saying that and remembering and bringing that back into perspective mm-hmm. is sobering, right? It's mm-hmm. very, it can set you back on the right track in that moment and thinking this is going to pass. This is a moment in time mm-hmm. and it's going to pass. How you're feeling right in this moment is just in this moment. You can move forward. You can do the next right thing. We're not here for me. We're not here for what do I think? How am I going to look? What do I want? Me, me, me. Mm-hmm. We're here for God. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, I remember saying that to myself right now. The whole old thing that we used to have, these little bracelets, you know, WWJD yeah. or whatever,
yeah.
the what would Jesus do? I would seriously say to myself, what would Jesus do right now when I'm frozen in a decision mm-hmm. or in my pain and my suffering and my sadness, and I was wrapped up into me mm-hmm. and my anxiety of what I was feeling in the moment or what I was going through? Because it was a lot, right? Mm-hmm. It was court systems for years. It was all kinds of things happening. And then my kids getting older and them having their own struggles. And I had never been in that chapter of life as a parent before. And now I'm alone in it. And I don't have somebody I can trust to ask those questions mm-hmm. to. Just asking myself, well, what would Jesus do? And it sounds so silly, but it helped me. Mm-hmm. And I would, you know, he's not going to be rude. He's not going to be selfish. He's not going to be mean. He's not going to be, you know, you could say he's maybe a little witty, right? But he's not going to be sarcastic. Mm-hmm. He's going to try to make the best decision for everybody involved, not just for himself. And so that would help me, like, think outside of myself and outside of the world mm-hmm. into bigger picture. And when I could take myself out of it and see it from that perspective, it would help me get back on track of
yeah.
not being poor. I don't want to say poor me, because it's so real and true mm-hmm. that you're suffering and you're struggling and you're sad, yeah. but it would definitely help me to see things from a different perspective yeah. and to bring it into the bigger picture
yeah.
of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what I talk about with the both and. It's okay to acknowledge how broken things are. It's okay to say, this is not the way it's supposed to be. It's okay to say, this is super hard and I'm lonely and I'm confused and I don't like this. And, you know, and
yes.
then to follow it up with what you were just saying, like keeping perspective, what we're here for, how long we're here for, what God calls us to while we're here. And, you know, I think that is such a helpful thing, even in regards to who God says we are. You know, when we are feeling shame, when we are doubting, you know, some of our decisions, or we have regret, or we, you know, have guilt or whatever it is, to just remember who God says we are as his children, and to look to scripture to find places where he speaks directly to us as his children and his beloved, and that he delights in us. And just, you know, reminding ourselves of those things over and over again when we are feeling so the opposite, you right. know?
Yes. And so much of his word is people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Reach out to people.
It is community.
I put people.
Community.
Yes.
We are saved individually, but we are saved into yes. a group of people.
Right.
And we need each other.
Yes. And so that's probably one of my other things, is that I was so fearful, number one, from like my safety perspective, but also from, you know, my social status, or, you know, how people would view me, you know, yeah. as weak, or if I reached out to somebody. And so encouraging other people that mm-hmm. if you are feeling so sad or mad or shame or anything, even feeling happy, right? Reach out to somebody. Mm-hmm. And if that person says no, go mm-hmm. to the next person. Ask them, hey, do you want to go to the park with the kids? Do you want to go have a cup of coffee? Do you want to have a 5-minute phone call really quick? Do you anything, mm-hmm. just anything. Can I sit by you at church? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that was the hardest thing. I didn't want to go to church as the single mom with 4 kids and a nursing baby and all of the things. And then my kids, they didn't want to be that either. Mm-hmm. But knowing that's what it was Sunday, that's mm-hmm. what we do. We go to church mm-hmm. and following through with that. And, being willing, you know, there was so many people at the church that you and I attended together mm-hmm. that when I did switch churches, literally were the hands and feet of God. They were there for me. Mm-hmm. They were the hug I needed when mm-hmm. I wasn't married and I needed somebody to be there for me. They would bring me meals, right? When my little guy broke his leg and my oldest guy broke his arm, you guys were the hands and feet mm-hmm. that literally carried me through when I couldn't carry myself. Mm-hmm. And had I not said anything to anybody about what I was going through, I wouldn't have had that help and support. And so being willing to be humble and to take people up on their offer when they do offer for some kind of assistance, whether it's a meal, a hug, a cup of coffee. I remember one of the ladies just offered to go pick up the prescriptions from the pharmacy for my little guys and to drop them off because to get out of the house with my little guy in a body cast, he was in a body cast,
right,
you know,
I remember.
Was not easy. Yeah. And, that was like a true miracle for me in my life.
So being also willing. I give you a lot of kudos for that too, with not giving up on the church, because I think when you have church hurt and when the church has brought hard things to you, either directly or indirectly or through the people or through, you know, just even some spiritual abuse that happens in different church situations, to not give up on the church is super important, but super hard. And I never blame people for getting frustrated with the church, because we are just a bunch of sinners, you know, too, in need of grace as well. But there are just some great blessings when you persevere and just say, okay, I'm going to go again.
Right.
And I'm going to, you know, and it gets back to what you said too about people, because, you know, I encourage people with that too, that if somebody, you know, doesn't respond the way that you are hoping or that you need in these really tender moments, they're just not your people. It's okay. Yes. It's hard to keep trying. Mm-hmm. It can be exhausting, but keep trying, because we are made to need each other. And there are great blessings when you let other people help and when you accept what they bring to the table.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I actually just had a very, very touching moment happened to me this past week. I was in Key West at an owner's conference, and another owner had gone through something very difficult, and I had reached out and I had made a Facebook post about other businesses about businesses, and that social media is a platform that people can easily just go and trash, you know, a company or an individual so easily. And it was about think before you say something, because there are people behind these businesses. And I don't think that her whole message was that we have such an impact on other people that we don't, and most of the time, or not always, do we even realize it. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of this show, you spoke of two specific moments that I had impacted you that I probably didn't know I impacted you. And she spoke of the impact I had made, and I had no idea that I had impacted her and spoke to her. Now, had I reached out and said, hey, do you want to go get a cup of coffee? She probably would have said no, because she was sitting in her pain or in her struggle or literally just all of the work that needed to be done in that. And I think both of us can relate to that
for sure.
Just being asked to go is so special, even if the person says no. So if you reach out to somebody and they say no, right, it doesn't mean that they don't want to spend time with you always. It might mean that they're in their own hurt or they're in their own situation. looking back in the beginning of my younger years when I was struggling in my marriage, if you would have asked me, I wouldn't have been allowed to go. And I would have had to say no. And I would have been like literally singing on the hills that somebody asked me to go and so sad that I couldn't go. But I would have been so thankful that somebody just asked me, that wanted to spend time with me. And so give them a couple chances, right? To say no.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not your people, right? Or maybe they're not supportive in your situation, or you leave feeling worse than you arrived, right? Mm-hmm. Or you left feeling unsupported. Then they're not your people. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people, you don't have, you know, the full understanding of the impact you can make other people. And they're going through other things too that you might not know.
Right.
And you could just be, you know, one piece of their mm-hmm. story that got them through that day.
Yeah.
That they continued another day.
That's so right. And I always say that too, that to grieving people, when somebody asks you to do something and you don't have the strength or the energy, or you just can't, to say like, thank you for asking, please ask again.
Yes.
Don't stop asking me. I might tell you 10 times no, but ask an 11th time, because that might be the time, you know? And
I
say that too to people that say, what can I do to help a grieving person? I say that same thing, like, don't stop asking. They're not going to want to do a lot at the beginning or for a while, or like in your case, you weren't able to. But I think that there are ways that you can say like, oh, thank you for asking. Please ask again. Don't give up. Like, don't give up on me, you know, because, it just takes so much energy and strength to get through these really difficult times that, the time will come when you're able to say yes. And for me, you know, there were a handful of people that kept asking, and I told them no so many times. And the fact that they persevered has, you know, it just meant the world to me. And back to what you were saying too about the Christmas card, April, like, I think too, we so often project what we would think, or what we think that they would think on it, when it's not even what they're thinking, right? Like, if I got a Christmas card from you that first year of your kids, my thought would be, I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of her for carrying on with this tradition, for doing this next step. And I think I felt that way too. It was so hard for me to want to present a card of part of our family, a card that only included part of our family, that I didn't do it, or when other people were sending them to me, that I was just like, it was constant reminder that our family was broken. But I think back to what you were saying with systems and routines, and this is just what you do when you send a card, and you made a way to do it, even though it was not the traditional way you'd done it. And then just trusting that the way people are going to receive it is probably not, you know, in that way of like, oh, what, you know, it's just her kids, she's divorced, what, you know, it's more of just like, wow, good for April. You know, we just, like you said, give people grace, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt, just do the next thing, not so worried about how they're going to receive it or take it. Because for the most part, people are, for the most part, cheering us on, you know, and wanting us to, as we do the next thing, and as we're trying to, you know, create something new out of the brokenness, that there's beauty in that, and people will see that as we fight for joy in it. So we need to start wrapping up. So I wondered if there was anything else that you wanted to touch on that I didn't ask you about, but you think is important to share here at the end.
I will share just a couple quick things, and I'll keep it brief. I remember listening to some podcasts and doing some studies while I was single. Mm-hmm. And I actually thoroughly enjoyed being single. I loved being single. And I would like to share with other single people, male or female, to switch your thinking, right? Change your mindset of, as soon as I'm married, or as soon as I find Mr. Perfect or Mrs., you know, Miss Right or whatever, that my life can start. Live and enjoy the chapter you're in, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a mom of two-year-olds and they're crying and they're fuzzy, just enjoy the chapter you're in. And find a way, if you're single, find a way to find yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Discover and become, I remember the podcast, and I can share it with you later. I remember hearing over and over that they would say, become the person that you're looking for is looking for.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. And it's so true, right? Whether it be a friend, a mutual, you know, if I'm looking to build friendships, I need to become the person that I'm looking for, would be looking for in a friendship.
Yeah.
That's, you know, for my future girlfriends or for the girlfriends that I had, I want to be that person, and for your future spouse or and then to enjoy your time alone, because once it's gone, right? So mm-hmm. explore and use this, because God doesn't see it as singleness as a negative. It's a moment of opportunity. Go explore hobbies, go explore countries, go volunteer. You're never going to have more time than you do now.
That's a good word.
Great opportunity to explore all of the things, to see what you like and what you don't like. So then when you do find mm-hmm. somebody that you are interested in being in a relationship, you'll know more of if this person aligns with you. So enjoy your singleness.
That's a good word.
Enjoy the chapter you're in. You don't need to rush. And then the other thing is that, I would always listen to podcasts, or at that time it was more on the radio. I listened to Focus on the Family or Family of Today. Mm-hmm. And they would say, you know, marriage is hard, but they never said it wasn't hurtful and damaging and destructive and controlling. They didn't mean that when they said marriage is hard. Mm-hmm. They meant marriage is hard because you're two broken people coming together. My marriage to Todd isn't easy. It's not a cakewalk. We have to work and we have struggles and fights and stuff too, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. It's not the same hard. Mm-hmm. It's healthy, and we work at things, and we both have, you know, our own issues that we have to grow and work on, but it isn't damaging and destructive and controlling. It is, you know, much different than that. So if you're in a marriage and you're thinking, I just kept thinking, well, marriage is hard, so this is the way it is. No, reach out and go. I know, Jody, you preach this too. Go to counseling, mm-hmm. get a counselor mm-hmm. and be able to talk about mm-hmm. things that are going on and get an outside person. Even if they don't respond besides, how does that make you feel? And I'm sorry you're going through that and you feel that way. Being able to express those things and having somebody safe to talk to. Mm-hmm. If I wouldn't have been willing to do that, I don't know what my story would mm-hmm. be today. Mm-hmm. But I had to take that step towards opening up to somebody and communicating. So I'm a huge advocate of therapy. And if you have to go, it's kind of like dating, right? You might not enjoy and be stuck with the first person that you started with. You might have to go through 3 or 4 or 5. That is not, and ending a relationship also, I'll tie this in together, it shouldn't be seen as failure. If you're dating somebody and it's been 6 months or 6 years, ending that relationship, if it's not right for you, is not failing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Having to end a marriage because it is inappropriate it's not God honoring and it's destructive and it's damaging and controlling is not failure. And sometimes you've got to leave and you've got to.
And I think that gets back to what you were saying about isolation and how we need each other, because if all you're hearing is marriage is hard, but you're not talking to anybody else about what hard looks like for them in marriage, you just assume this is what they mean. And so it's another example of you need people. A Christian counselor would be ideal. But other people in your life that you can say, this is what is hard about my marriage. Is that normal? Is that kind of what's hard in your marriage? Or, you know, and just kind of having the a couple safe places. You don't need to go and talk about your marriage to everybody and their brother, right?
Correct.
But they're just having a couple safe people that you can talk about it with to really discover if it's just the normal hard or if it is the damaging, destructive hard. That's a good word.
Absolutely.
Well, April, this has been a really good conversation, and I'm excited to have my listeners hear your story. And I know that they are going to take away a lot of encouraging things. And even if their story is different, there's just a lot that will resonate. And as always, I am just confident that God will use this episode to help others in their own fight for joy. So thank you for your willingness to share today. And I guess I would just like to end the episode by asking you what you hope that people will remember from our conversation and from your personal story of fighting for joy, what is one thing that you would like to leave my listeners with today?
I think probably the biggest thing is just to take one tiny step. That's really the gateway into finding your own peace and joy. And sometimes joy comes first, and sometimes peace comes first, and you have to fight for the joy after, and sometimes you're fighting for the joy and the peace comes after.
Yeah,
but just do one thing, one little thing in the right direction. Maybe it's leave the house for the day. Maybe it's go outside and get the mail. Maybe it's go to the grocery store. Maybe it's calling somebody or texting somebody. Maybe it's researching a church that you want to go to. Just one small thing. Maybe it's finally calling the counselor or making some phone calls for that. But just one thing that you can do, one step to fight for your joy. And it is worth it on the other side. It will pass, but it will not be easy. And God does use these things. It's terrible. He doesn't want them to happen, whatever struggle you're going through. But for those who believe, He will find a way to make good out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Just like this podcast, Jody, you had a horrible situation. And now He, because of your faith and your willingness to fight for joy, has used your tremendous sadness for something that is benefiting so many people, because you were willing to do one little thing and take a step over and over and over, day after day, to fight for your joy. So had you not taken that first one little step that probably felt like a mile, you wouldn't be here helping other people today. So that would be my encouragement.
If this episode was encouraging to you, I'd like to ask you to please consider rating the Fighting for Joy podcast and maybe even leaving a review. Just find my show and scroll down to where it says tap to rate or write a review. Tapping to rate literally takes a second or two, and writing a review can be pretty quick as well. Just sharing that you enjoy listening or that it's an encouragement to you is enough. The longer that I do this, the more I understand how helpful those ratings and reviews really are. The more that you leave, the more that different podcast platforms value this content and work to get it out there into the various search engines. So thank you for considering this. It really means a lot to me. Also, don't forget that as a Fighting for Joy listener, you can receive 10% off of your first month of counseling with BetterHelp, my podcast sponsor. So check out my link at betterhelp.com/fightingforjoy. Christian counseling can be such a huge help in this broken world and a major tool in the fight for joy. And as so many of you continue to ask how you can help support my work, signing up for a month of counseling will not only benefit you, it also shows BetterHelp that there is value in sponsoring this show. So again, that's betterhelp.com/fightingforjoy. I will never tire of encouraging my friends to try therapy. It literally can change your life and help you fight for joy. Thank you so much for listening today. If you were helped or encouraged by this episode, please share it with others. I would also love for you to find me on social media. You can connect with me and others who are listening on my Fighting for Joy podcast page on either Facebook or Instagram. You can also send me an email at fightingforjoypodcast@gmail.com. Podcasts have been such a lifeline for me in grief and one of the top ways that my soul is recharged and encouraged on a weekly basis. I truly hope that this podcast will do the same for you. Keep fighting for joy.